Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told you that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Okay, today we're going to be covering incorporated versus unincorporated settlements, villages, towns, and municipalities. But before that, we got a special announcement to make. We're going to bring Robin on. She's going to talk about it. So we're going to do it right after Faith Street.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay. All right. Our jump-off topics will be incorporated versus incorporated, unincorporated settlements, village towns, and municipalities. However, before that, let me open up her mic. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, everybody. Well,
hey, you sound like you're in a
cave
or something. Yeah, we can hear you. Just sound like you're far away.
Oh,
but
I'm on my headset. Hold on, let me switch. Okay. Hello, is this better?
Yeah, that's much better, much better. All right. Well, now speaking of Faith Street, you must have been on Faith Street. Because, I'm not going to steal your thunder. What's the latest from Robin Maven?
Okay, so, you know, I've been working on the creation and then the development of a broadcasting, an internet broadcasting network. And we have many radio stations We have many television stations and our podcasts, of course. Well, recently we just got the mobile apps in the Apple Store and the Google Play Store for our television portion of the network. So it has the channels, the TV guide. You can change the channels on there. It's just really fantastic. And it's free. You don't have to subscribe or anything. So we're really excited about being able to provide that for ourselves and our audience.
Right now,
what do you think about
it? The name of the app and how can a person download the app to their phone?
The app is in the Play Store, both Apple and Google, and it's called I Am Streaming. I Am Streaming. So you search for that and you download it. We'll also be publishing out the links for you to make it easy for you too. But it's just as simple as that. You click on it, install it, and start watching. How long did it take you to get connected this morning?
Seconds, really. I mean, it.
Yeah, so tell everyone what you think about it.
Yeah, the usual, like any app, maybe a minute or so or less. It downloads like any other app. Say that again.
Tell everyone what you think about the app.
It's a slick app. It's a good app. It's on a level, the same level as Airbnb or DoorDash or Grubhub or Instacart. Is just as good as any of those apps, in my opinion. Easy to download. And
yeah,
I have an Android phone. Yeah, I have an Android phone.
Yeah.
So, it's. I recommend everybody, download it to their phone because they've got some good programming on there already. And there's more to come, including the content that that we'll whip up. But I'm very impressed.
We have a wide variety of channels. For those of you that like the Western movies, we got that. For those of you that like soap operas, we got that. We've got Soul Train Channel, In Living Color TV Channel. We have the documentary channel. We have African-American stage plays. We have HBCU TV. It's just amazing the variety over there. Homeless TV. There's a network for everybody.
Right, so it's I like the innovation of it. I love the innovation of it. It appears to be infinite, so congratulations on that. So, like I said, you've been on Faith Street. You pulled that out of the invisible.
Oh, yeah, you know. Hey, Rocky. Yeah, so there you go. And I've been wanting an app. For so long, I've been seeking someone that could create the app for me, and the graphic user interface and all of that, I went through rounds of people who took me on a round or two, and then God just provided the way.
Now, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Remember, it's been over 4 or 5 years, 5 or 6 years. Speaking of mass communication, I mean, remember that guy that black guy that owned some radio stations up in, I guess Seattle or Washington State. Yeah. Whatever happened with that?
I think the father died, but the son is still doing it.
So he's managed to keep the stations going.
Well, if you could call it that.
Right. Now my next question.
I mean, but
the
stations are still in existence. Yeah.
Okay. Now let me ask you this: what do you think about the stations, particularly AM stations, that if they don't adopt the app technology, what do you think might happen to them?
They're actually they don't have a choice because iHeartRadio is going in and buying up most of the local radio stations. And then when they do that, when they take ownership of the local radio stations, they discontinue the terrestrial signal and convert it. You can only listen to it digitally, meaning you have to download the app to get it.
Right.
So if people don't adapt, they're going to get left behind.
Correct. Because I'm looking at this app, well, any app, but particularly the way yours is structured, it basically makes the phone the new transistor radio. And everybody's got a phone.
Yeah.
So if you got a smartphone, it I am streaming. Conveniently, I mean, real easy and simple, converts your phone into. So you're right. Matter of fact, I wouldn't even buy it.
And then you can also, from your device, you can cast it to your television and watch it on TV.
Wait a minute. Now, let me process that one, because they do have smart TVs out here. So, all right, hold on. Repeat that again.
Have to be smart. But the technologies are there that you can cast from your phone to your television, whatever you're watching.
Oh, okay.
That's in the technology too. It's just there.
All right. So, what are some of the wonderful things that we shall be able to do? With I Am Streaming app.
Like I said, you can watch all of our programmings. And then also another thing too, for our sister and brother bloggers and podcasters, if I were you, I would come over to I Am Streaming and do your show on a network that was built and created for y'all to do this on. And I will monetize y'all. So where Blog Talk and YouTube won't monetize you, I will allow you to monetize your channel. I'll revenue share the advertising. How about that?
Okay. Now I'm on the app right now, and the channel that I'm on, and I'm scrolling it, is Homeless TV. And I'm looking at, let's see, City, Homeless Servant. That's on from 4:30 to 5:03 p.m. Homeless, Home Free, and what's this? Homeless, Home Free, and Transit. Understand the situation on a downtown campus. Okay. Let's see. Grandma arrested for feeding the homeless. So, okay. If what does a person need to do to get content on homeless TV via your app?
They need to connect with me, okay? You can dial 866-446-2246. And if you want to get your programming on the network, you can either have a channel or a show. You have your option. And then also, you can advertise on the network as well. And if you bring advertisers to the network, I will revenue share. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an 80-20 split. You keep 80% of the revenue that comes in from the advertising you bring in, and the network gets 20. It's the millionaire concept. Yep. So that's one thing that people will be able to do at I Am Streaming that no other network will afford. They'll just say, here's our channels, you can watch it, but I'm giving the people the opportunity to have their content broadcast, and they can monetize as well. Ooh,
okay.
Thank you. Now, how's that for Faith Street?
Yeah, you're right. Well, I'm,
yes, sir.
I'll be exploring it all day. Well, you know, throughout the day.
How you like me now?
Boy. Well, I'm impressed. I can't even find all the words to say. So for people to get this app, they need to, which is free, instruct us simply how to do it again. I already have it on my phone, so.
It's in the Play Store.
Go to Google or Apple Play Store.
Yep, I am streaming.
I am streaming. Okay, well. That's a good thing. All right, Robin. Well, thank you for dropping in and sharing that with us. Like I said, I will be exploring it today, and I'll be pushing it out there every day. And then I'm looking for. I'll be calling you back. To see what my next step. All right, everybody. Let's more Steve Harvey at the Apollo.
That link that I gave you, you should put it in the marquee.
Uh-huh.
And I'll see everybody later. Bye-bye.
Okay.
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I didn't have nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me, and however he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit, so I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car, I went to a payphone, and I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called. And I punched in the code, and the said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How I'm going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this it, I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, wanting to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It said, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back. And I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida. And that night, I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone, I call Chuck Sutton, I say, hey man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I call Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I parked my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't gonna move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in the dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man, he said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I'd have had this 4 pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken didn't wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie. Then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass. Then he went back to them jokes. And they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This is Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just said, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage.
It was almost 2 years ago that I started work on a small log cabin in the northern Canadian bush. And it has been exactly a year since I closed the cabin door for the last time and moved away. Finally, I got the chance to return, and I am anxious to see how the cabin has fared the last four seasons on its own. While most parts of North America are enjoying mild spring weather with no snow, my aluminum snowshoes are falling through waist-deep powder and temperatures of minus 20 degrees Celsius. Although this looks like January weather, would you believe that this is late April? It's been a long, hard winter here. Lots of snow and a solid month of minus 40 degree temperatures. There were even a few days that registered right around minus 50. It seems that the lynx population has been hit the hardest this winter. Several locals have reported that their dogs have been attacked by lynx along the hiking trails. Normally, lynx avoid this sort of contact with bigger dogs and humans, but the prolonged cold temperatures have forced them to make desperate decisions. It wasn't far from here that I spotted a mother lynx and her two cubs last year. And of course, I didn't have my camera ready at the time. On my way into the cabin, yet another lynx had silently stalked behind me for a short distance, but it eventually turned off my path and took a different direction. And I wouldn't have noticed it at all if it weren't for the footprints it left behind over my fresh tracks. In building the cabin, I wanted it to be simple for two reasons. Number one, because of the cabin's location, I knew that I'd be having to do everything by hand. Getting the equipment and supplies in, moving and hoisting the logs would all have to be done with good old-fashioned manpower. And reason number two, I didn't have a lot of money to work with. Simple as that. And in this complicated world, simple just seems to offer more. Complicated offers bells and whistles, but simple. Simple offers freedom. Although some would argue that this cabin wasn't built to code, it is still perfectly legal. That's because it's built on privately owned property, and the local government doesn't require a permit for any structure that is 10 feet by 10 feet or under. And this log cabin just so happens to be exactly 10 feet by 10 feet. So yes, I'm aware that building my logs right on the ground without proper footings and not debarking them means that they will not last a full century, like they could have if I had done all these things. But that's just fine. These logs will probably last at least a quarter century without any need for repairs. And so far, the cabin has settled and dried out quite nicely, and the bottom rows don't show any signs of rotting in the near future. I am also aware that I'm using a tarp to cover the roof, and contrary to popular belief, it is not instantly disintegrated or even began to fade yet. Besides, tarps can be replaced easily enough, and at low cost, so even if I have to replace it every 5 to 10 years or so, it won't be a problem. I'll just make sure to buy the heavy-duty kind. And yes, I know that there are gaps in my door, and that it most definitely isn't bear-proof, but in the wintertime, when there's a draft, I just place a blanket over the door and it stays quite warm and cozy inside. As for the bears, I haven't had any try to come inside yet, and if they do, they're not going to find it too terribly interesting. There's no food, and I didn't leave any fine china behind for Mr. Bear to break. Anyway, I like the door, and so it stays, gaps and all. Did I mention that it used to be a coffee table? My point is, there will always be some who will find fault in this simple design, but all I know is that it works for me. And at the end of it all, I only spent about $500 on the entire cabin, and most of that money went into the lumber I used in the roof. If I wasn't planning on moving at the time, I would have taken longer to construct the roof out of smaller logs, which would have significantly brought down the cost that much more. But I don't regret a single decision I made in the cabin's construction. Upon entering the cabin, I could see signs that there had been a visitor in my absence. A couple wads of insulation along the top logs and a pile of pine nuts on the shelf told me that a squirrel had stopped by for a visit at some point. Oh well, no harm done. It wasn't anything that 15 minutes of dusting couldn't fix.
Yeah, that's weird. It's still supposed to have audio. Oh, he's still in. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. Let's try another audio.
By now, you're all excited to run out there and convert a car to electric. But what car do you convert? A lot of times people ask me, can I convert any car, or will a X work well as a conversion? Well, the truth is you can convert any car you want to electric, but some are going to be better than others. In general, if the car got good fuel economy as a gasoline car, in general it's going to make a better electric conversion. But there's a couple things we have to think about. One is just size. First of all, you might be a bigger person, you might be a smaller person. So you might need a larger or smaller cabin space on the car, just depending on who you are. You might also want either a two-seater or a four-seater, depending on how you use the vehicle. Maybe it's just you driving around by yourself. Maybe you need to carry a child seat or carry your family with you. So that's going to be important, too. Also for size, we're going to need enough room for all of our batteries. Since we're using lead-acid batteries, they're heavy and they're pretty bulky, too, so we're going to need room for those to go. We also need to consider the weight of the car. Heavier cars are going to take more energy to push down the road, so they're going to be less efficient. We're not going to be able to drive as far in a heavy car as we would on a lightweight car. You also want to keep in mind the engine style and location. Engines can be in the front or the back of a car. They could be mounted longitudinal. They could be mounted transverse. For example, usually pickup trucks are rear-wheel drive, but the engine is longitudinally mounted. It goes the direction of the length of the car. A lot of front-wheel drive cars have a transverse-mounted engine. For example, in my Geo Metro, it's front-wheel drive with a transverse engine. And the style and the location of the engine is going to place some limitations on the size and the type of electric motor that you're going to be able to put in there. We also want to consider the body style of the car. A pickup truck is great because you can carry a lot of batteries in it. On the other hand, maybe you'd prefer a hatchback car where everything's enclosed, but you actually still have quite a bit of cargo space, and it's a lighter weight vehicle. The choice is up to you, but you do want to keep all of these in mind when you're thinking about what car you want to convert. And the other big thing that we want to consider here is it's really just the body of the vehicle that we're using. The body, the suspension, so we want to make sure all that's good. You don't want to buy a rusty car to convert to electric. Those electric components are going to last forever. Well, that body is just going to rust apart. Now, the suspension and the parts of the vehicle that hold the weight of everything, you want to make sure that those are sound when you purchase your vehicle. Now, let's talk a little about the vehicle that I chose to convert. This is a 1996 Geo Metro. I bought it for $500. When I got it, it had rust on the rims, it had some ugly pink pinstriping down the side, and the engine did run. However, it still had a couple of charming features on it. For example, the radio antenna was snapped off. Both outside mirrors were also snapped off, although they were included in the back seat. There was also an issue with the starter where the main fuse for that was broken. So when I went for a test drive, I had to have the hood popped up so that the owner could stick a wrench across the electrical conductors to be able to start the car. So my test drive of this car consisted entirely of left-hand turns, because that's all I could do while sticking my head out the driver's side window. But overall, the body on the car looked pretty good, especially in my area. We use a lot of salt in the winter, and because of that, car bodies do tend to rust up pretty quick. But overall, the car was not in bad condition. So I bought it, and I towed it home. Some of the things that I like about this car are simply the fact that it's a hatchback. Hatchbacks give you a lot of flexibility. You can carry people, you can flip the back seat down and carry a lot of cargo. They're just very nice that way, and they tend to get good fuel economy too. I also like that this car has both daytime running lights and driver and passenger airbags, all of which I consider to be good modern safety equipment. So even though it's a smaller car, I feel very safe driving it. Another thing I like is that I actually have the right amount of headroom in this car. The shape of the cabin is just a little boxy, and even though the car is a little narrower than my wife's Pontiac Sunfire, I still feel more comfortable driving it because I kind of have more room right around my head here. And that's one of those things that's just a personal preference. For example, a friend of mine is converting a Dodge Neon to electric, and he previously drove a PT Cruiser. Now, he's a big guy, but he liked the way that the PT Cruiser fit him, and because the Dodge Neon is based on the same frame, they're very comparable vehicles, so he knew that for him, a Dodge would be a good car to work on because it already fit him and he knew how to fix a lot of things on there. So if you already have preference for a certain car or another, that might be a good car for you to convert because you already know it fits you, you know how to do the repair work on it. Another thing you're going to want to look for in a car is that it has a manual transmission. Yes, you can convert a car with an automatic transmission, but it's going to be more complicated and less efficient. The simplest way to go is with a manual tranny. Because I was looking for a hatchback, something lighter weight, and a manual transmission, I was looking at Geo Metros and other similar cars. I was also looking at like some of the older Saturns, lightweight, kind of a nice size and shape, or even like an old VW Bug. They were very simple, rear engine, manual transmission, and it's been a very popular car for hot rodding for just about the longest time. Eventually, though, I did find the Geo Metro and went with that. Now, you might also want to take a look through the classifieds or Craigslist for cars marked with bad engine or blown motor. Because you're going to get rid of the engine anyways, you might be able to get a really good deal on a car that just doesn't have one working. On the other hand, if you get a car with a good engine, you can pull that, sell it, and make back a lot of the money on what you paid for in the car in the first place.
Okay, was scrambling around here, you know, doing stuff, multitasking. Anyway, today's our quick topic, because tomorrow we have, hopefully we'll have a guest. He had to reschedule, so hopefully we can get him in tomorrow morning, and then because they're in a different time zone, they got a busy schedule. But anyway, so today we're touching on incorporated versus unincorporated settlements, villages, towns, and municipalities. And we'll probably touch on this topic at least once a month. If not, some kind of way fit it in at least once a week. All right. Now, there are many communities around the United States. I'm using the United States as the example. There are 19,500 municipal communities that are incorporated. And they're incorporated by they're municipal corporations. These communities are municipal corporations. They can be very small in population. They can have under 100 people. Some have under 50 people. And they can be over, like, New York City or Los Angeles or Chicago. They can have millions of people. Now, out of the 19,500 towns, and this is just municipal towns. There's 19,500. There are more communities in the United States that are not incorporated. All right. So there's only 10 of them that have a population with the city proper of a million or more people. All right. Now, so what I want to discuss this morning or put out this morning is fundamentally, and you know, you need to know where you live. Okay. Now, here's some words. If you get a group of people together, and it could be three or four people, you know, there's no set number, but on a piece of land, the most fundamental aspect of a community, a formal community, would be, all right, you get a piece of land, it's a settlement. New York City is a settlement. Chicago is a settlement. You know, Summit, Oklahoma is a settlement. But you can have... There are distinctions. There are legal distinctions. Now, if you have just a plot of land with people on it, fundamentally that like it's like settlement. That's settlement 101. Or you know what? Let me put it this way. Let's go township or city 101. What's step one? Step one is to get you a piece of land and where people decide to live, okay, that's a settlement. That's step one. Now, depending on where you are in the United States, let's say you wanna have certain services, like a police department, a water company, you know, social services, okay. Well, then you're going to have to graduate a little bit. You're going to have more people, and you're going to have to get legal, take a legal step to go from a settlement to, now it could be a village, but in most cases, villages are kind of self-sufficient. But let's say you got and I'll give a good example. Freedom, Georgia, which is not a town yet, is not legally a town yet, but three ladies in Metro Atlanta, they spotted 97 acres of land. They got 19 families together, and they bought that 97 acres. That's the settlement. What they call their settlement right now is the Freedom, Georgia Initiative. It's not legally a town. It's not legally a city at this point. But this settlement is called the Freedom Georgia Initiative, Freedom Georgia for short. Now, their plan in the future is to, because they're up to 502 acres now, they want to get up to where they will be able to set up their own municipal police force, have their own elective mayor, and elective city council. All right. So they have to take some legal steps to do that. All right. But just keep in mind, would you prefer to live in a municipal, a town, a community that has a municipal charter that offers municipal services? Municipal services is like water, electric. You got to pay for those. Trash pickup, recycling, police protection, EMS, you know, emergency, you know, for emergency, medical emergencies. Those are six basic fundamental things that a town, now, like a really small municipality, because there are towns in this country that have a municipal charter that have less than 100 people. Some have less than 50 people. So their tax base will not allow them to provide all those basic services I just named. There's not enough money in the budget to have a police force, let alone get a police vehicle, or even sustain a jail. Okay. It's 50 people or 100 people in town, it's not enough. Even with the town of Mayberry, I don't know what the population of the fictional town of Mayberry was, but, you know, occasionally, you know, Sheriff Taylor didn't have that many people to lock up. All right. So Otis would come in, the town drunk, and he let himself in. But most of the time it was drunk. So, and jails could be a profit center for a community, for municipality. So you got a small town, so they might have maybe if they have 300, 200 to 300 people in their community, all right, they might be able to have a volunteer fire department, maybe. Okay. So in any event, if you live in a municipality, and look, there's, once again, there are communities that have municipal charters and there are communities that have no municipal charters. They're also often called unincorporated communities or unorganized communities. Same thing, but that's what they refer to it in Canada. And in your unincorporated communities that are non-municipalities, typically it's less expensive to live there. You know, if you want to build a house, you can build a house many times without pulling a building permit because there's no building permit agency in that unincorporated community. You know, you have to take care of your own trash because there's no you're not a municipality, and, you know, municipalities, that's one of the basic services that they offer, but if you're in an unincorporated community, you have to take care of your own trash. You have to take care of your own recycling. You want water? You have to either know how to drill a well or hire somebody that can drill a well or harvest rainwater. And you have to be responsible for cleaning it up, too. What kind of filtering system that you have? Now, where I'm at physically right now, we have a reverse osmosis system that cleans up the water where we can drink and cook and that type of stuff. All right. So now if you look at the Amish communities and look on it, because look and type in Amish map of communities, Amish community map, Mennonite communities map, and Hutterites, H-U-T-T-E-R-E-I-T-S, Hutterites, and they're all similar. Look at their maps of where they are in the United States and Canada. And the common denominator is these: they basically set up settlements and or towns and or villages in areas where it's unincorporated, or if it's incorporated, it's in a municipal situation, then it's a small place. And once again, the smaller the place, the less rules and regulations that are needed. So me personally, I like to set up things in an unincorporated place, or if it's incorporated, it's an incorporated community, which means it's a municipality, then it's got very light regulations where I can have the maximum amount of freedoms in there. And then some of the basic services, I can get together with other people and we can form our own community where, okay, we don't need municipal services because we know how to provide our own water. We don't need protection. We don't need police and nothing like that with all those squabbles because it's a small group. We know each other. If something gets out of hand, then the person will be banned from the community, ostracized, excommunicated. Okay. We don't need a grocery store because we can either grow the bulk of our food and or we know how to go to a farmer's market and get what we need. Or if we just want to go to any town, a Walmart or Whole Foods or whatever, we can do that too. But we're not, you know, the basic services that we decide we need in an unincorporated community, that's what we do. In Germany, they have little small villages called Dorf, D-O-R-F. And I've been in a number of Dorfs over in Germany that they just have four households. That's it. Four households. And that little community of four households, they basically make their money on weekends. Because in Germany, they do a lot of what is called Fest, you know, where there's festivals all over the country, year-round, man. But that little Dorf, which with nice homes in it, okay, that's how they do it. You can even have your own school. One of the things of your major municipality services is they have public schooling. Well, in an unincorporated community, you can have your own homeschools, or you can set up a central building, and the children within that unincorporated community can attend that school if they so choose to do so. So, let me see if I can read something formal for you. Because that's one of the things that we'll be setting up here, and not only for ourselves but for others who are interested. Let's see. Unincorporated. And okay. Unincorporated. Let's see, communities. I'll put towns. Okay. All right, what does it mean to be unincorporated? If a town is unincorporated, it means it does not have a local government. I like that idea because I feel myself with the right compatible townspeople and neighbors, we can govern ourselves. Because that's one of the problems of big governments is you can't agree on things or it's more difficult to agree on things and the corruption element can enter into it. Unincorporated communities exist by tradition. These communities simply do not have an elected officials at the town level. Okay. Question, why would a town want to be unincorporated? Unincorporated areas usually have much smaller taxes compared to cities. Since unincorporated towns do not have their own local government, there's no tax charges for city management purposes. So you don't have to contribute money for municipal water. You don't have to contribute money for public education. You don't have to pay for a mayor's salary or a city councilman or alderman's salary. But if you want to go in, and then let's take a look at, and you guys, if you want to throw out any state, let's see, unincorporated towns in well, I'm in Florida. If you guys want something other than that, let's look it up. Unincorporated towns in Florida. Okay. Category, unincorporated communities in Florida. And you can do this in your own state. All right. There are approximately, now Florida has 67 counties. And Florida gets a lot of negative news that comes out of this state from Trayvon Martin or whatever. But that news is basically coming out of Miami, Dade County, that area, the one Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Orange County, Tampa, St. Pete, Pinellas and Hillsborough County, Duval County, and sometimes Tallahassee. That's about it. I haven't even named 10 communities in Florida, and there's 67 counties. Now, in Florida, okay, hold it, okay, there's 668 unincorporated communities in this state. Aubrey Springs, Florida. You don't hear anything bad about coming out of those places. Not to say nothing doesn't happen. I'm just saying. Anchorage, Florida. Now, let's look at Anchorage, Florida. And I never heard of them until I just read it. Anchorage, Florida is in Palm Beach County. And they don't, oh, they have a population of 38,600 people. Jesus, man, people calling me at the wrong time. Okay. Now let's go to Anthony, Florida. And they don't even list the population here, but it does have a zip code. And then something I heard within the last couple hours, Wentworth, Texas. All right, Wentworth, Texas. Okay. Wentworth, Texas, that community, all right, let me read it from Wikipedia, and you can look this up yourself. Wentworth, Texas. Wentworth, Texas is an unincorporated community in Van Zandt County, Texas. The community had a population of 32 people. Give me 1 hour on a radio station, a good radio station, I can get me 32 people. Anybody can get 32 people. You search social media, right, you can get 32 people. There's got to be 32 of the like-minded people. Go out and buy some land and start your own community. Start your own town. Let's take a look now. Wentworth, Texas is in Van Zandt County, Texas. And let's take a look at Van Zandt County, Texas. Van Zandt County, Texas. Have a population of 59,541 people. That's the county. And they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They have 5 settlements that are legally classified as cities. All right. They also have 2 towns. Now, a town and a city have 2 different legal descriptions. They have 2 towns in that whole county. Then they have census-designated places, Ben Wheeler, Calendar Lake, and Myrtle Springs, and then they have unincorporated communities Wise, Wentworth, Walton. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. They have 12 unincorporated communities, which means to live in these communities, it's much more affordable to live there because, number one, there's no tax base that the city's hitting you up to pay for the mayor, pay for the city council, the aldermen. Water, you're on your own. You know, trash, you're on your own. Let's look at Primrose, Texas, which is in I love the United States of America because, see, these places are where the real United States of America is. It's not New York City. It's not Chicago, Illinois. It's not Los Angeles, California. It's not Orlando, Florida. In Primrose, Texas, population 24, Primrose is in an unincorporated community in Van Zandt County in the United States. We don't hear about shootings in that neck of the woods because with 24 people, everybody knows everybody. They don't need a court system to settle disputes. Go rural and go small. Go, matter of fact, go tiny if you can. All right? Tundra, Texas. Let's check that out. That's still in Van Zandt. Tundra, Texas, population 34. You got people that are living in, I'm going to take myself, I got a house in Washington, D.C., man. I don't even live in the property taxes over $5,000 a year. Anyway, Oakland, Texas, also in Van Zandt County, 26 people. A town of 26 people is unincorporated. If you're struggling in a large, if you're struggling in a large city with the property taxes and, you know, for some of you that are paranoid about the police or whatever, matter of fact, you know what? Let's go to Tennessee. Unincorporated towns in Tennessee. Okay, here we go. And Warren Houston, we got to have him on here because he can really break this down. But all right, in Tennessee, there's 797 unincorporated. Memphis, Tennessee, where just within the last month or so, there was a beatdown where a young man was killed from his injury, died from his injuries, I'll say that. That happened in Memphis, Tennessee, Bibb County. So in Memphis, if you want to feel a little bit safer, in my opinion, I'm just one person, there's 797 communities outside of Memphis throughout the state where you can live. Now, I'm in the A's right now, so let's look at Alloway, Tennessee. What's Alloway talking about? Alloway, Tennessee is an unincorporated community in Cumberland County, Tennessee. It's so, man, they don't even list their population. So let's go back to the list. Let's go to Alpine, Tennessee. What's Alpine talking about? Alpine's got, it's an unincorporated community in Tennessee, 497 people, small town. Unincorporated, you know, you're going to have to take care of your own water. You're going to have to take care of, you know, your own trash and recycling. But and they don't need the police. Andersonville, Tennessee, what's that talking about? Andersonville, Tennessee has a population of 472, the real United States. Whatever state that you're interested in, go online and type into any search engine, unincorporated communities in whatever state that you're interested in. I'm going to go large this time. Alaska, because Alaska is over twice the size of Texas. So Alaska, hold it, I got to spell Alaska right. Okay. All right, let's see. Unincorporated communities in Alaska. There's 60. There's 60 unincorporated areas of Alaska. Let's go with Alexander Creek, Alaska. Population, 40 people. Let's see. Clear Alaska they don't even list their population, it's so small. Okay, Gordon, Alaska. Well, once again, they don't even list it. Okay, Jack Wade, Alaska. That's another unincorporated community in Alaska. Man, all right, look. I tell you what. Let's go to New York State, home of the largest populated city in the United States, New York City. So we're going to unincorporated communities in New York State. Okay. Okay, unincorporated. Jesus. All right, wait a minute. Unincorporated communities in New York State. Okay. I like Wikipedia's layout better, though. Wait a minute. Oh, here we go. Okay, here we go. Here we go. I found it. Okay. New York State. Oh, they break theirs down differently. Census designated places in New York State. They have 611 unincorporated or census designated places in New York State, like Accord, New York. Accord, New York has 573 people. Aramunk, New York has over 4,000 people. Bedford, New York has 1,600 people. Let me see what's happening in Bay Shore. Bay Shore, New York. Oh, no, this is too close to New York. 29,000, that's too many people. But if you do your homework, Calcium, New York, I never heard of that, 3,400 people. There are a bunch of towns. Me, I'm partial to towns that have under 400 people. Actually, to be honest about it, under 200. To be honest about it. The smaller, the better for me. So there's a bunch of towns in the United States, trust me, a bunch of them, that have a population of less than 100 people. Many of them less than 50 people. Many of them are unincorporated, and it's less expensive to live in those towns. However, now, if you're dependent upon it now, for some people, because I'm an extremist, you know, if you want municipal water, if you want less municipal power, that includes water, electricity, heating, fuel for cooking and heating your home and all that, have at it. If you got to play, I got a friend of mine right now that, I mean, would you want to live in a place where you got to pull a building permit to put on, and you can't even put on your own roof. You got to pull a building permit. Then you have to hire somebody who's not a contractor. You can't put it on yourself. That's what we had the program yesterday called Fake Estate. It's not real estate, it's Fake Estate. Anyway, tomorrow, hopefully we'll have a guest on. He couldn't come on today. Hopefully we'll have a mayor on, and he's going to talk about a bunch of communities. And then one of the things that we'll be doing here on the regular is for those of you who want to start their own community, that's what we'll be doing here. It's My House. It's My Town. Okay. So let's see. Let me get back to my studio. That's all my rant that I have for today, and it's taken us 9 years to, because I've been playing around with the idea, but that's where I'm at. Particularly that interview we had a couple of months ago with the ladies from Freedom Georgia Initiative. And, you know, I can't, like, they came to the conclusion, you know, they couldn't fix Atlanta's problems. So go out and create your own community. Go out and create your own community. It can be small. It can be, you know, you can like want something small for your family, get you an acre or two, have a little family compound, and everybody's good. You know, the parents can have a cottage or a cabin, and the kids, you got 3, 4, 5 kids, right? Built 3, 4, 5 cabins on 1 or 2 acres. Nobody's crowding each other. And you have another cabin, as a family community center. You can set it up that way. You can set up a family business, just like the Amish and the Mennonite and the Hutterites do, and a lot of these Native American reservations. They have a community-based business. You can have a family-based business, just like the Amish, Mennonite, and the Hutterites. So that's where I'm at with it. You don't need to march and protest, none of that. You know, if you control your own space, life is good. Life is good. It's not only good, it's real good. So, all right, that's L.A.'s rant for today. Like I say, tomorrow, hopefully, we'll have a mayor in. Oh, and Warren Houston, you know what? Warren. If that's you, press 1, because you got me thinking on this when you used to do law study group classes. I think they're on Monday night, something like that. Warren, press 1 if you're available. Okay, great. Warren, good first thing. Good morning. Hello? Warren, can you hear me? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Hold on. Yeah, now I can hear you. Warren,
yeah,
I co-signed on everything you said on the female solution earlier today. But you introduced me to this one night on one of your law study groups. You mentioned unincorporated communities. I never even thought about that. I mean, I heard of the term, but I never bothered to look any up. Man, I was amazed at how many unincorporated communities exist practically in every state of the union.
And not to mention some of them are for sale.
Exactly. So in the context of that's when I was listening to the female solution this morning. It's, you know what, why wait on reparations when you can go out and either start your own or buy your own town? Because, like you just said, there are many of them available around the country. So, for the first thing, explain, because we got some new listeners that want, explain who you are and what you do, and then tell us about unincorporated communities.
Okay, for as much as I can, I'm in class, but I thought I'd listen in. I'm Warren Houston. I'm also the creator and originator of the People's Law Study Group from Houston, Texas. I have an executive law degree from Champlain College. And when I started the People's Law Study Group back in 2012, its purpose was to educate the communities, mainly black communities, but any community for that matter, but mainly the African-American communities, on the judicial system and how it works. Because what I've realized out of just sitting back observing is that ignorance and illiteracy, it seems to be our biggest problem as a people. It's not race. So education is always the key and the answer. So if we knew the judicial system and understand how the judicial system works, it would give us more leverage in the courtroom. As even as LA is even talking about with the unincorporated cities, while we sit and complain about what's going on in the inner city, if there was enough of us who had the mindset to come together financially, we could actually purchase a town. The only real policeman in any city is the sheriff. The police that we deal with in the inner cities are that of the municipality. But when you get out in the unincorporated areas, there are no police. There are the sheriff is the only real law. So it just depends on what you do when you buy the unincorporated city, if you want to make it a municipality. And you have a lot of control and power as to how to operate that. So it's so many things and alternatives we can do if we think in positive as a unit and are thinking ahead instead of thinking backwards and still trying to recoup the stuff that happened 200 or 300 years ago. It's not going to happen.
Right. Now, explain the distinction between an unincorporated community and a municipal corporation or an incorporated place.
Well, it's like the difference between personal and private. What's done in the public is public, and what's done in the private is private, not for the public use. And so when you're dealing with a city or municipality, say like the big cities, Houston, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, Atlanta, Georgia, you name it, Dallas, Fort Worth, when you're dealing with those areas, those are municipalities. In other words, someone owned those cities. They bought those cities. And when they bought, after they bought those cities, and then businesses and people moved in and began to migrate in that area where you have heavy traffic and heavy population, well, then they bring in a police department to secure the city and keep the city safe and monitor the city. They bring in a fire department, and they bring in whatever needed to operate that city. But an unincorporated city does not have those things. And so you are more responsible. You are more or less under the conservative mindset of being independent and having the free will of yourself to operate as you please. So that's what happens in an unincorporated town, which preferably you're going to find more or less crimes and a lot less taxes.
All right, hold on, let me process this. All right, now, so what a town that has a municipal charter is like public, but then an unincorporated place could be private?
Private, right. It would be considered more
Got
of a private.
A private, I like that. I like that thinking. I like it.
Yeah,
I like that term. And I think you done coined a new term, Warren, a private community.
Yeah.
Private community. A private village or a private. I like that. That fits. That fits.
Yes. Well, that's basically what it is. You know, it's you don't see all that stuff. It happens in these small towns. You don't see any of that on the news. That's what's happening in these big cities.
Right, right. Well, now you used to run the People's Law Study Group. You had a Sunday night podcast on Blog Talk, and then you used to run the Law Study Groups. What are you doing now, and do you plan on bringing back the Law Study Groups or at least the podcast?
Well, as far as the Law Study Group, it would have to be a request. I have a passion for law. I have a passion for teaching. But it would have to be a request of a group or an organization, someone who's interested in progressing the education as it relates to the judicial system here in America. Any of the judicial aspects that types of law that we study. You know, I'm open to any of that, but that would have to be a request. Other than that, anything is not on the table right now. But the concept of the Blog Talk, as most people, they don't know, I do have a studio, 5,000 square foot studio space, which things have been put on hold, but we're working on opening up a TV radio station here in Houston.
Okay. Okay. Now, quickly, because I know you're in a classroom, on the discussion about reparations this morning, I mean, I co-sign on everything you say, said on that, because, but you know what, a lot of those discussions, they get, a lot of them, they just can't get past the emotionalism, and they don't even look at the facts.
Right, because the brother, I think, what is his name, Minister Shaheed, I think that was the one that was narrating the show today. Yeah.
No, that was Kareem. Kareem. He was the narrator.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
My moderator, excuse me.
Okay. Well, he couldn't get past the fact that what he was saying was emotional, because I told him it was emotional. But this is not emotional. But the way you're coming at it, the way you're looking at it, is emotional. Nobody's denying the fact that people of color faced major atrocities and what was. Nobody's denying that. But the way you're looking at how to handle it, you're operating out of emotions because you're not hearing what's being talked from a logical, legal standpoint. All you're concerned about is, hey, what has happened to us? And we get stuck there. But it's too much. You're talking about over 200 years to try to unravel. In my opinion, it's too much to unravel. And first of all, you have to look at the definition of reparations because, as I was saying this morning, when you hear the term reparations, then everybody, the first thing coming across their mind is a check. But they don't even know what the definition of reparations is. The definition of reparations, basically, from a legal standpoint, not a Webster's Dictionary, is basically...
Yeah, the Webster's Dictionary, man, that was like listening to a third grader. But they didn't know, though.
Exactly. But, you know, it's basically... those being reimbursed from the spoils of war. I'm just talking off the top of my head. You know, those that were damaged in war. And so you have to go back and first of all and look at the situation. We were not in a war. It was an agreement. And first, secondly, the United States, when slavery first started, the United States was not even in existence. So you
That's
want to make
correct.
The United States You're responsible
right.
for something that was not even here. When the United States formed, it took on a problem that already existed. And
right.
in my opinion, you know, like I tell people, they resolved that opinion. They resolved that problem within about 82 to 89 years or somewhere in there. And I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, about that. A little bit under 90 years. It took them to get to that when Abraham Lincoln became elected.
Yes. Because if you read in the discussion of the country, there's a document known as the Articles of Association. It was written before the Declaration of Independence. And there's talk about slavery in that Articles of Association. And you can see that there was a split in the country, that there was some that was for it and some that was against it before the country even started again. So it was a problem from the beginning. But it was rectified in about 89 to 90 years. And I think that, in my opinion, commendable.
Right. Yeah, it took a century to resolve that problem and whatnot. So, I didn't hear that whole podcast this morning, but I'm glad you were able to put that out there.
You had a lot of emotions.
And whatnot, so.
People not willing to look at it from a logical standpoint of understanding what was what. The United States never owned slaves. The United States never owned or had sanctions for those ships to go over there and get any slaves. And like I said, it wasn't even in existence. So the government pays back reparations to a country or a nation that they have directly been involved in war with. And so these people that started slavery were individuals and private corporations.
It was private enterprise.
Yes, and these were
private enterprise.
People from different other parts of different Europe and different parts of the country, not even the United States. Again, the United States was born until 1774, and slavery began in 1619?
Yeah, if not earlier. Because soon after Columbus, but Columbus wasn't even on mainland, what they call mainland of the United States. He was in the Dominican Republic. But did you see the movie called The Woman King?
Yes.
Starring Viola Davis? Yeah.
Yes.
Did you see the movie The Woman King? Okay.
Yes. Go ahead.
Right. In that movie, which is a historical documented movie, African kingdoms traded slaves. So, I mean, if you want to take back the reparations, we got to take it back across to Africa in that case.
Right. Right. Well, you know, if you want to talk about that, most of us are mixed. That's another situation.
Right.
I think Pianki brought it up this morning. He was talking about Frederick Douglass. One of Frederick Douglass' parents is white. So even if they did agree to pay reparations and say we're going to give each individual $50,000, do Frederick Douglass get $25,000? I mean, these are questions
that's
that you
true.
Have to ask from a legal standpoint, you know.
Right.
It's really too much of a mess
that's
to
true.
Go back and try to unravel.
It's too much. It's a lot to unravel. You know, it's too much work. So that's why I like the idea of an unincorporated community. You know, go out and seek out, and like I said, some of them are available for sale. And then for the more pioneering spirit person, you know, just go out and find you. I mean, you can buy your own 40 acres now or 2 acres or whatever you want. If you had that type of pioneering spirit and, you know, build your own place. We got Chris Collins on here. He can show you how to do that. So. And on that note, all right, tomorrow, thank you, Warren, for those commentaries. Tomorrow we have, a mayor scheduled to come in to speak. We've had at least three mayors. We've had three mayors on, so tomorrow I think we're going to have our fourth mayor on, and you're going to get a lot out of it. So tune in tomorrow. Tune in on time. Because we won't have a long, we'll do 15 to 30-minute intros. But tomorrow we're going to do just, the quick three or four-minute intro. And then if the mayor's here, because he was supposed to be on today, but he had to rearrange. So hopefully he'll be in tomorrow. So come in tomorrow when we have a mayor of a small town on. This mayor is in a place that most of you have heard of is within the real United States of America. So on that note, we're going to wrap it up for today. Thanks for listening. Everyone have a good rest of the day.